It's one small step for man.
There is no planet B.
I stand here today humbled.
You turn if you want to.
I will not be lectured about sexism.
The winner is Cindy.
This Week in History.
Well, tonight in This Week in History, we're bringing you an amazing rescue operation with a happy ending. It was the dead of winter in Siberia in 1984 when local hunters came across lots of beluga whales in a small pool in the icy Senyavin Strait. And their joy about finding an easy feed was quickly replaced with worry because they realised there were so many whales there and they were in a lot of trouble. It would take until the end of February, but a rescue mission involving a powerful icebreaker and classical music would finally free about 2,000 whales. Well, to learn more about this incredible story of how the whales were saved, we've got our resident whale expert, Dr. Vanessa Perotta here. She's a leading wildlife scientist and science communicator. Hello, Vanessa. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Well, hello. Thank you so much for having me. Oh, we love beluga whales and we love it when in Australia we talk about a species we don't really know much about when we're here in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah. So look, is this story, which became known as Operation Beluga, legendary among whale fans and scientists? Is it quite well known?
Well, I think the thing is that when we, as scientists, yes, for some, for others, no. I was not really aware of this, but that's also potentially a result of the geographical location. And when we are studying the certain species we're studying, we often have our little blinkers on and don't really look elsewhere. But it is an incredible thing to really share this story because such an incredible creature, and it's one that's it's great when animals are saved, but also that opportunity to share information and to learn like what we're doing now.
So let's start by talking a bit about belugas themselves. They're quite cute looking whales. Can you describe them for us?
Yes. Oh, my goodness me. Okay, so beluga whales, if you think about lying on your bed, I know this sounds really bizarre, but the mattress, some of you have a memory foam mattress, and if you think of your hands being on the fluffiness of it, a beluga whale, in my opinion, feels very much like a soft memory foam mattress. They are completely white. They've got these cute little pectoral flippers, like their arms, and their little eyes are on either side of their head, but their head is kind of got this rounded mound, which is called their melon. Now, their melon is really helpful for navigation. So they produce sound, they send out sound, they use biological sonar, and then they also receive sound and the response back from that output of sound through their jaw. So they're blubbery, they're wobbly, they're white. They don't have a really, they're dorsal finless, so they're not like a bottlenose dolphin or the killer whale where they've got a massive thing on the back of their body. But they are very inquisitive and they are called the canaries of the sea because of the high frequency sounds they make.
Oh, and they also, they appear to be smiling, don't they? Everyone thinks they're quite friendly.
That's right. If your listeners can think back to the movie Flipper or you've just seen a bottlenose dolphin, you know how they've got that fixed smile? Well, belugas have this, what appears to be a fixed smile, so I don't think they're deliberately doing it. In fact, much of the time when you see these animals, they're so inquisitive, yet when they've got inquisitiveness and at times maybe there's challenges going on for them, they still look happy. So we need to make sure that we think about, okay, you know, these beluga whales, are they always happy or how are we interpreting their behaviour as humans?
They seem to have resting happy face perhaps, yeah.
Resting happy face, I love it, yes, instead of the other option.
Exactly. Dr. Vanessa Perotta, who's a whale expert, is here. So where are they normally found? Is it actually just up in Russia?
Yes, so in the Northern Hemisphere. So beluga whales, so the easiest reference I can provide for your listeners is that when we think of the Arctic, so top of the world, we think of animals that are different to Antarctica. So we're thinking beluga whales, polar bears, the Arctic, the cold, fresh water. And my young calves, myself, my kids, they have this puzzle and they've got a beluga whale in Antarctica. And oh my goodness, it does my head in because I'm trying to teach them that there's no beluga whales in Antarctica. They're only found in the Northern Hemisphere. Very cold waters, so cold that if you were to be in the waters with them, you would need a dry suit or you just couldn't take it. But they have that blubber. And for any of you who have young kids, I was on Play School Science Time last year and we spoke all about why whales don't need to wear coats. And that's because they have a blubber coat, an inbuilt warmth or layering of fat that keeps them nice and warm.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of a beluga now, and not only do I see its resting happy face, but also its blubber coat. So,
if thank you, play school.
If we go back to that Northern Hemisphere winter of 1984 into 85, Vanessa, this was very much where you would find them, right? Near Russia in the Senyavin Strait. And I've had a look at the map, and it's sort of, if you look at it, it's kind of across the road from Alaska.
Yes, yes, that's right. So there's the potential for animals. They are generally in the Northern Hemisphere, Alaskan waters, Russian waters, very cold, productive. There's the opportunity for belugas to swim from one part to another. And as you can imagine, these animals don't have passports, but they go where they want when. And so the opportunity for them to be sighted in different areas in this Northern Hemisphere block area, that's quite usual.
So tell us this story then. How were these whales first spotted, and when did sailors start realising something was wrong?
There was, and you said it, over 2,000 beluga whales trapped in a small freezing and shrinking pockets of this sea ice. So it was quite thick. And so it was, unfortunately, these animals were located, and it was like a what do you do mission, right? And so the question is that, yes, these animals are found in these kind of waters, but sometimes they can run into trouble where they can't get themselves out. And so the main method, or the main thing for a beluga whale or any type of whale, is that these animals need air to breathe. You're breathing right now. Your listeners are listening and now thinking about their breathing. If you're a beluga whale, you sound like this, like a that's their breath. And these animals need the air to be able to breathe. So when you have animals stuck in a location, they need to make that decision of, are we able to hold our breath for however long we can hold it, for about 20 minutes or so, to reach the other side, or how are we going to get out? And if they're unable to get out, then these animals will remain in an area where they are able to keep breathing and then hope for the best.
And so in this case, I think we had something like 3,000 whales, which is just incredible to think of, stuck in this relatively small spot. And they're all sort of what, fighting to come up and grab the air, aren't they?
Well, oh my gosh, if you were in that location, if you had a spy camera in that very location, these animals would be communicating with a lot of stress. There would be efforts to try and at least reach the surface to have a breath of air, but you're competing with 2,999 other whales. So that it would be very stressful. How do you get these animals out of this location if you're an onlooker going, well, how are we going to do this? And that's where the massive operation came into play. And this is very much a case of humans using their great thinking powers, but also creative ways and physical ways to try and assist these animals that were running out of, well, I would say, time, given that they only had small pockets of time to breathe and competing with all the others.
Dr. Vanessa Perotta is here. And we get on to the operation itself shortly, Vanessa, but I'm just sort of wondering, you know, how long could they have survived there? And do we have any kind of theories about how the whales might have ended up stuck in this pocket?
Well, the thing is that beluga whales, they can navigate and they are associated with ice. But when you have changing environments and unfavourable conditions, environmental conditions at time, then even those that are really good at navigating may get into trouble. And we see that with animals outside of the Arctic as well, with fin whales, non-beluga whales, fin whales, pilot whales. These animals are not in ice, but sometimes we don't know why they may run aground. And one of the theories could be misnavigation, or in this case, environmental conditions that have rapidly changed. All these animals weren't able to navigate successfully, or there was challenges that presented these whales with an opportunity that they did not want to be part of. A beluga whale needs to keep breathing, and they need to be able to move in order to find their prey, because if they're unable to feed and they're restricted to a small area to just breathe, then these animals will, unfortunately, the worst case scenario is they will die.
Right. So not only if you're all stuck there and you're all fighting to come up and grab a breath, but if you can't get out, then you can't find more food either.
No, that's right. Mm. So there would be probably a period of time that these animals would probably last, because they're marine mammals. They feed, they store fat. Those storage supplies, I mean, they're not like a humpback whale, which feeds at one time of the year and then migrates in another to breed. These animals would need to keep feeding in order to continue their homeostasis, their daily activities, the functioning of their bodies. And if they weren't able to meet that, then I would say that, the worst case scenario is you have animals either starving to death, or in some cases, some animals who just aren't able or not strong enough to make it to the surface to breathe. It would be absolutely dire.
You're on Nightlife on ABC Radio. It's Suzanne Hill here with you. It's This Week in History. And we're back in February 1984 to learn about an incredible rescue of some trapped beluga whales. It's now known as Operation Beluga. We've got Vanessa Perotta here. So we've sort of established that these about 3,000 of these beluga whales are trapped in a small pocket where, you know, there's water and they can breathe, but they're surrounded by ice and they can't get out. And I understand it at first the hunters who spotted them, Vanessa, thought, well, this is an easy feed, I guess, you know, shooting fish in a barrel kind of thing. But then they realised this is a big problem and decided that they needed to try to help. The locals did make a few kind of efforts to chip away the ice at first, didn't they?
Yes, well, this is a thing. So there's only so much effort that human power can do. And you're absolutely right. It would be like shooting fish in a barrel. But at the end of the day, what would humans do with 3,000 beluga whales? How can you store so much meat? You couldn't. I understand some populations up north will continue to hunt these whales. But yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, well, okay, can we help them ourselves? Can we use human power to start chipping away at the ice? Can we open up the ice for these animals to create more breathing hole? The navigation, or at least the opportunity to create an outlet to an area where these animals can get out, essentially, was well beyond human capabilities by hand. So this we needed not only to provide them with a pathway to get out, but also to let them know they can get out. So there's all these different levels of complexities. And at the same time, the clock of survival is ticking because these animals are becoming fatigued. They are stressed. There's a lot of sounds going on. There are so many different factors at play. I just want your listeners to kind of get that understanding of it's not just these animals sitting here or swimming here going, oh, yeah, I've got air, I'm okay. It's how do we get out? This is not good. We're all stressed, different age classes, adults, young ones potentially, matriarchs, the older ones. I don't know. Are any taking the opportunity to mate with others, given that there's lots of females and males in an area? I don't know. This is all the things that you would think about.
So a plan was devised by the Soviets, Vanessa. What was the first idea that they came up with?
Well, the thing is that icebreakers, so your listeners may be familiar with ice breakers. So in order to access remote areas in the Arctic and Antarctica, icebreakers are awesome. I mean, they do literally break up the ice where a ship will go. It essentially drives up to the ice and then the weight of the bow will break the ice and create a passage. So that is obviously much better than humans digging and chipping away at the ice. So an icebreaker was called in and the icebreaker did create a path for the animals, which is great, but that's all well and good. But how do you get 3,000 whales who, I must say as well, who's probably never been near vessels as close as maybe what they had the opportunity to be in at that time. Remember, they're also stressed. There's so many different factors. You would think, okay, it's like, you're free, go. But did they go? Well, it wasn't that easy to do.
No, it wasn't. There was even a false start. I think the captain of the icebreaker at first went, no, this ice is too thick, I can't do this. But then everyone said, no, this is really bad. The belugas are starting to die. So he loaded up with petrol apparently and then went for it and cut this big channel though. But as you're saying, so he's what, freed up the channel, but the belugas are like, well, what are we meant to do now?
That's right. It's like that saying, you can lead a horse to water, but will it drink, right? So if you're thinking about a marine mammal, beluga whales are very social. I know I keep saying this, but you need to be understanding of their social complexities. So it's kind of, it would be very much follow the leader type scenario.
Are they the sheep of the sea in that kind of way?
Yes. Yeah, they're the white sheep of the sea. Maybe there's a black sheep in there, you never know. Excuse me, but one of the things is that if you've got an individual that might be higher up in the hierarchy, so maybe there's a team leader who's going, yep, this is what we should do. No, I'm not going to try that route. I don't know what is going on over there. We're going to stay where we've been. I'm stressed. I'm hungry. I'm losing body condition. This is awful. I just can't think straight. I don't know. I'm not anthropomorphizing. But the main thing is that we as humans needed to help these animals get out. There was an icebreaker. There's a clear path. how the hell are we going to get these whales to get out? It's not like we can go in there and push them out, right? They need to be able to swim out and be assisted in some way.
Okay, so people turned to their knowledge of dolphins, and what did they come up with?
Well, so a ship is very noisy, okay? So woo, 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 woo. These are all sounds that vessels make, and they're not natural. But then what I'm about to tell you is also not natural. But acoustics is one of the main ways that marine mammals can see and understand the world around them. And from our knowledge, and I used to be a dolphin trainer, marine mammals can hear. We can't understand exactly how well they can hear because that's still yet to be understood 1,000%. But these animals would likely hear certain things in their environment. So if a ship is too noisy, how about we turn to playing something that might be of interest? And classical music, anyone? Classical music could be the ultimate weapon here to help assist these animals out. So one of the options, in addition to the sound of a vessel, was to play classical music over the ship's loudspeaker.
And it was this composer, Vanessa Tchaikovsky, whose music did the trick.
Who would have thought classical music was something to not only calm humans but to be enjoyed by beluga whales to successfully guide them to open water over a period of time?
I mean, the thing was, they had a real taste for the classical music because they tried all sorts of other music. They started playing the pop music and other music, and it was the classical music that the whales responded to. Why do you think that might be?
Well, this is the thing. So if we visualise what music looks like on a computer screen, there's different notes. There's maybe highs and the lows. And if you think about, if you're crossing the street and you go to a traffic light, you hear that that noise. And the reason I'm very in tune with acoustics is because essentially my master's research was trying to prevent whale entanglement in fishing gear by playing animal sound to tell them to go away from nets. And so to accommodate for the different range of hearing, it may be that classical music, just due to its natural sweep of different heights and tones, may have been the thing to entice these animals. Or maybe they were absolutely intrigued by this unusual sound they've probably never heard. I mean, who has heard classical music underwater before in the Arctic until now?
Yeah, I'm wondering what he played there. Was it the Nutcracker or Swan Lake? Because there's a lot of very famous Tchaikovsky pieces that they could have been trying out. I would love to know the exact pieces that got them out. But then Captain Kovalenko, apparently, he also, like, it was a real, kilometre by kilometre. He'd move a kilometre, play the music, the whales would eventually figure it out and follow. So it was a real kind of, he really had to coax them out, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. Everyone wants a quick fix to things. But when you've got the stressed animals and you found something that's kind of working, it's kind of like that, does this sound good and do you want a bit more of it? And maybe in this case, fortunately, due to the curious nature of beluga whales, maybe that was the thing that was enabling them to not only be coaxed but out of this area, but also their intrigue and curiosity of going, well, hold on a second, this sound is really interesting, but I'm making progress here. Look at where we are. And so that piece by piece, by playing this classical music over the ship's loudspeaker, over a period of time, these animals were perhaps calmly guided to open water over several days. But this is really, really interesting because, well, A, we haven't had an opportunity to have this case where we've had, fortunately, stranded animals like this. There were killer whales that were stranded in a small pocket, I believe in Antarctica at a period of time or at another location. But this really is, and this is why we're talking about it so many years on, what a fascinating combination of human thought and interactions with marine mammals in order to save them. And using classical music, I mean, if we had social media back then, there would be fully, this would be covered so interestingly and in such a fabulous piece of artwork, and perhaps this has inspired classical music going forward. Maybe your listeners can share some light on that as well.
Dr. Vanessa Perotta is here. So, Vanessa, has the tactic ever been tried again that you're aware of?
Well, what I'm aware of is that in Australia, so an Australian example, there was a Brutus whale, a bride's whale. So these are offshore, potentially summertime whales that are found all, I would say, during our Australian summer, year-round in Australian waters, but we just don't know much about them. But my understanding was one was trapped in a river in Queensland or northern New South Wales many years ago, and one of the ways that they tried to get it out was not by playing classical music, but was by playing killer whale sounds. So if these animals know that killer whales are bad news, hopefully they'd swim away. And in some cases that was successful, in other cases it wasn't. But in terms of using classical music, I personally don't know of any other examples. I know that having been a trainer, marine mammal specialists are likely to provide the animals that are in captive environments with a variety of educational or at least enrichment is the key word. So things that these animals can, enriching their everyday, showing them different things, doing different things to stimulate their minds and keep them active. This is the, as the young kids would say, the OG of using classical music to save marine mammals in what was an iconic rescue.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, we see occasionally beached whales in Australia. Do you think we could try classical music on beached whales?
Oh, look, okay, here's the thing. So often when we find a stranding, it's too late. The animals have already stranded. But now new research that we're looking into, and this is a collaborative global effort, is observing whales or any type of marine mammal before they strand. So pre-whale stranding behaviour. Maybe if the timing's right where someone has identified these whale, like offshore species close to shore, and they're going, oh, what is going on here? And then the opportunity for scientists to go, well, this looks like this could potentially turn into a stranding, then classical music. But then also we have, as a scientist, here's the unfun bits, we have ethics to come into play. Would ethics approve of doing that? Is this something that maybe people could try that's not going to cause them any more stress? The last thing we want to do is stress these animals. But if it's going to stop them from stranding, then yes, why wouldn't we consider that? This is, it's very interesting, and it's also something that we as humans and the general audience listening to this can go, oh, I listen to classical music daily. How much of this can influence maybe preventing a stranding, or what does this have on how these animals interpret the world that we as humans put so much noise into? Maybe we can provide these animals with something that can tinkle with their curiosity.
So finally, Vanessa, look, do you know much about how beluga whales are faring, how their population is doing up there in the very cold northern reaches of the planet?
That's a really, really good question. I'm not well informed to tell you how many individuals there are, but I would tell you now, no one in the world would know how many beluga whales there are. So the main concern for beluga whales and other animals that use the ice as part of their existence is climate change. As humans, we need to be mindful of all our activities on Earth because that does have flow-on effects for the ocean. So reduction in sea ice is a real big concern for beluga whales because if we lose sea ice, we lose not only the ability for these animals to have a functioning ecosystem, but we also see more human activity in those areas that traditionally weren't there. So I'm talking about opening up new marine roads because ice is melting, which means more tourism, more opportunity for shipping movements in these traditional areas that may not have had so much exposure. And that can have flow-on effects for these animals that may be growing in numbers but also at risk of so many different pressures that we as humans present for them. So beluga whales are pretty good at reproducing, which is a good thing. It's just making sure that these animals are enabled to enjoy a productive, thriving environment to support their needs from us as humans, but also to ensure that they can live for many, many years, over 20 plus years. Beluga whales are incredibly intelligent. They need to be provided with the most optimal environment so we can coexist together, which is the ultimate message for anyone when it comes to managing human wildlife interactions in the world around us.
Well, Vanessa, thank you so much for being here on Nightlife to share this story of Operation Beluga with us.
Thank you so much, and I hope people go and learn and Google. And also remember, May onwards, we will start seeing our own whales in our blue backyard very soon in Australian waters.
Yeah. Vanessa, thanks once again.
Thank you.
Dr. Vanessa Perotta is a whale expert and, yeah, telling us there about Operation Beluga. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.